This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Seahawks taking on the New Orleans Saints Monday Night Football live from Lumen Field. It's going to be a packed house. It'll be a crazy, crazy building and, frankly, a win they desperately need. This team needs to figure out how to get a win. And here to talk about this team that's coming to town, the New Orleans Saints, he covers them for ESPN. Saints reporter Mike Triplett is joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hello, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
We're good. We appreciate you taking some time with us. And, you know, we've been looking at this team through the stats and the numbers. We won't, you know, pretend we've been watching Saints games every week. But in looking at those numbers, Mike, especially on the defense, the Saints look like a problem. You know, they're number two in points allowed. They're number or tied for second. They're number two in rushing yards allowed. They're, you know, the one area of weakness, it looks statistically anyway, is against the pass. But overall, defensively, this team looks great through the stats. Are they as good as the numbers tell us they are?
You know, they really are. I thought they might take a step back on defense this year because they lost a lot of key pieces. And then they came out just on fire and almost raised their game another level. And a lot of the veteran leaders like DeMario Davis, who, if people don't know about him, there is really become one of the best linebackers in the NFL. And obviously Marshawn Lattimore at cornerback and Cameron Jordan at defensive end. They've got Malcolm Jenkins at safety. They got a lot of veteran leaders who have really said, you know what, we want to be the identity of this team now that Drew Brees is gone. This is not an offensive first team anymore, and we're ready to say the defense is going to win games for this team, and they've really lived up to that reputation. Those numbers would be even better if they didn't have a fourth quarter collapse that was really uncharacteristic, and then an overtime collapse against the Giants where they had an 11-point lead with 7 minutes to go and lost. If they just get one extra stop in that game and play like they usually do, you're looking at a team that's even better in those stats and could be a 4-1 team right now. So the defense has really, really been playing well, and it looks like they're going to get a couple guys back from injuries this week too. So that has been the most consistent strength of this team.
Yeah, Mike, I'll tell you, DeMario Davis, I'm an ex-linebacker, so I'm paying attention to that. Is he the leader of that defense too?
He's become really the heart of the team, which is amazing. It's amazing that he had been on the Jets, the Browns, the Jets again, and was available for a low price in free agency when the Saints got him in 2018.
Wow.
I'm not over-exaggerating things to say he's the best free agent signing this team's had since Brees, because he's been an all-pro on the field and just really all that stuff off the field. He's the guy who does the chants now, the pregame chants now that Drew Brees isn't here. He used to do those, and, you know, he's obviously a captain and an emotional leader. And the rare player who has played the best football of his career since turning 30, and now he's 32 and hasn't slowed down yet. So he's been a special case that, you know, really everything came together right around the time he came to New Orleans.
Hey, as far as their pass defense, what's happening there? Because it is the one sort of, you know, outlier from everything else that's going on statistically. Is that as bad as the numbers say?
Yeah, no, a lot of that happened against the Giants, and some of it has happened with teams playing catch up against them because they've been playing with big leads in a lot of their wins. But the pass rush is the most concerning part of that pass defense. They are, I think, second to last in the NFL in sacks per game. And they lost Trey Hendrickson in free agency. He's still doing a good job for Cincinnati. And then the guy who they thought was going to step up and play a bigger role this year, Marcus Davenport, has been out since week one. He might come back this week, which will help. They have a great defensive tackle in David Onyemata, who's been serving a 6-game suspension. So he hasn't played yet and won't play in this game either. So sacks have been a problem for this team. They're not getting enough pressure on quarterbacks. We thought the number two cornerback spot was going to be a problem, but they have a rookie from not too far away from you, Paulson Adebo from Stanford, who's held that job down pretty well. They actually traded for Bradley Roby during week one to try to shore up that position, and he hasn't gotten on the field yet because the rookie has kind of surprised them with how well he's played. So they have a lot of depth in the secondary, especially at safety. But the pass rush has not been what they were hoping just yet.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, I would ask you, like, who's the one injury that's hurt you the most? But how about the top two?
I mean, long list.
Yeah, so many of them. But really, who have you missed the most? What area, you know, because you've got a kicker who's coming back, but it looks like Michael Thomas, Quan Alexander,
yep.
Davenport.
Don't dismiss that. they have used four, they have signed four other kickers since Will Lutz got hurt. They had one miss two, they had one miss three field goals. They had one miss two extra points.
Yeah.
That has really been a problem for them, and he might come back in this game. And there is a case to be made for at least putting him in the top three, if not the number one most missed player. So don't dismiss the kicker being on that list.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a who's who. That's the thing, is the guys they've been missing, they've been without eight starters for most of this season. And they're, like, most of them are top 10 players on this team. Michael Thomas, obviously. We all know how good he is. Their all-pro left tackle, Teron Armstead, has been missing since the beginning of week three. Their standout center, Eric McCoy, has been missing since week one. Marcus Davenport, the defensive end I mentioned. Quan Alexander, who you remember from the 49ers, he's been missing. So they're missing real, real guys. But I think it's definitely the combination of both Michael Thomas and the guy who would have been their other starting receiver if he wasn't hurt to start the year, Traquan Smith. The passing game has been pretty unusual. Jameis Winston's doing a decent job. He's actually got the fifth best passer rating in the league. He's thrown 12 touchdown passes with only three interceptions. But they're last in the NFL in pass attempts. They're last in the NFL in completions. The passing game just hasn't come together yet because they just don't have a lot of reliable pass catchers. They lost Emmanuel Sanders and Jared Cook in the offseason. They've lost Michael Thomas and Traquan Smith to injury. There just aren't a lot of guys to throw the ball to. So when they get those guys back, and I think there's a good chance Traquan Smith could play in this game, they really need more reinforcements at those pass-catching positions.
Well, and you just hit on what I wanted to ask you about, and that is Jameis Winston, because from a distance you look at it and say, well, yeah, he's not throwing the interceptions the way he did, the pace that he did before. I mean, 30 in a season is just ridiculous. But looking at his yardage totals, I'm going, man, he threw for 111, 148, 128.
Yeah.
You know, just weird numbers. You know, he completed 15 of 30 in the last game. I mean, is that lack of accuracy, I guess? Do you put that on what you just talked about, the pass catchers?
No.
Or is that Jameis?
Not necessarily. I mean, his completion percentage isn't great. And one thing I've noticed in my small sample size of covering Jameis Winston the last couple of years is it's not that he's inaccurate, but he doesn't throw. He throws low percentage throws more often, well, certainly compared to Drew Brees. He takes shots down the field, and he doesn't do a lot of dump off to the running back, check down to the tight end. So it's not that his 15 and 20 yard passes are off the mark more than other guys. It's just that he throws the ball down the field more and doesn't get a lot of those, you know, easy completions, which is still a work in progress. There was one game where Alvin Kamara, for the first time in his career a couple weeks ago, was not targeted in the passing game. And you know, sometimes he gets 13 targets in the passing game, or certainly when Drew Brees is right here. So that is part of the low completion percentage. But no, that hasn't been a huge reason why the 111 yards and things like that you're talking about. Just weirdly, we still don't have a real sample size with Jameis Winston because of their games. They beat the Packers 38-3 in week one. They beat the Patriots by nearly 20 points until I think they tacked on a late touchdown. Where they're just running out the clock on those teams. They've had four of their five games, they've been leading by double digits late in the fourth quarter. So there have been a lot of just game scripts where they don't need to throw very much. And then the one game they lost in week two to Carolina, they were just getting blown out and they were having pass protection problems and they couldn't get a pass off in that game. So we still don't know what this offense looks like in its peak form, but it's not a matter of Jameis Winston can't complete passes. That is not the case. I still think there's a lot of hope and confidence that he could be his best self in this offense working with Sean Payton. But they definitely, with the offensive line they have, with Alvin Kamara at running back, and with the fact and the defense that they have, their formula has definitely been, let's win time of possession, let's win, you know, let's be a ball control offense. They're not asking Jameis Winston to win and lose games for them.
Mike, I saw your article, and Marshawn Lattimore, I mean, it's one thing. He had career-high 6 passes defense, tied for the most by any NFL player in the last 15 years, but he's doing it with a cast on his hand. And what kind of thumb surgery did he have in week 2?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously was not a major, major surgery. It kept him out for only one game, and then he came back with the cast on. It's possible. We haven't seen him in practice yet since it's a Monday night game. We'll see him on the practice field for the first time tomorrow. It's possible that cast could be off as early as this week. And he's disappointed because he thought he missed it. He thought 2 of those 6 pass defenses could have been interceptions.
Yeah.
But what's really special about him is, you know, he hasn't quite cracked that. Everyone says, like, Jalen Ramsey, Marshawn Lattimore, he hasn't quite gotten there yet. Because he's battled a little inconsistency, he's had a few drop-off games here and there in his career. But where he always shows up is when he's shadowing a top receiver, which I imagine he'll do against DK Metcalf in this game. And that's what he did against Terry McLaurin in the last game when he won the NFC's Defensive Player of the Week. He just relishes doing that. He's been great against Mike Evans. He's been good against Julio Jones. That is what he loves to do, is match up against the guys. Got a great combination of size and physicality, but also really good speed. And he loves saying, it's me against you, and he loves those matchups.
Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation Saints reporter, is our guest here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. As it pertains to Jameis, how is he viewed out there? We look at him out here as, yeah, he's a Band-Aid. He's the in-between guy, in between, you know, Drew Brees and whoever becomes your next franchise quarterback. Am I off on that, or how is he viewed out there?
Ask 10 people and you get 10 different answers to that question. You know, there's so many people who are Team Jameis that feel like, well, it's funny, let Jameis cook has become a popular expression.
It doesn't work very well.
Good luck with that.
Orders, which obviously they've borrowed from Seattle, but because he's become sort of a role player here, a complimentary player here, there's a lot of people who just dismiss him and say, oh, come on, there's no way he's going to be the answer. And it's a tough transition going from Drew Brees, who is so opposite in so many ways, being a high completion percentage guy and a chip away at you, and then Jameis Winston, you know, he's completed 4 passes of 49 yards or more this year. Is a 72-yard touchdown pass, a 55-yard touchdown pass. These are plays that Drew Brees was not making. So there's a lot of people who love the excitement he brings. There's a lot of people who are skeptical but keeping an open mind, and there's a lot of people who are like, no way, that guy, you know, we saw him in Tampa Bay, he can't win. So it's really all over the map. I do still think, you know, he's got 12 more games in this regular season, and I think potentially a playoff run. For, you know, to find out for sure, I still think we're going to find out how good he is when he is surrounded by the best sort of all-around team he's been surrounded by, and certainly the best offensive coach he's surrounded by. Just weirdly, you know, we don't have a complete picture yet based on the 5 games, the way they've gone that I've said, but I think they'll know by the end of the year. But I think there's a very good chance that he could be better than, you know, drafting a guy 15th overall next year or trading up in the draft. I mean, I think if he was in this year's draft, he would have been a first-round pick. There's just so many enticing elements. It's just if you can channel them the right way.
Well, what does that mean to Taysom Hill? Because he's such an interesting player. Obviously, he's a Swiss Army knife out there, and he was paid, you know, a pretty decent chunk of change, not elite franchise quarterback money, but still an investment in him. And just looking at, you know, how often he's playing or how often he's on the field, are you getting your money's worth out of Taysom Hill? Is he a guy that you still look at as a potential future quarterback for this team, or how does he fit?
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder about the long-term future for Taysom Hill. But, you know, both these guys are only under contract through the end of this year. So big decisions will have to be made on both of them after this year. I think Taysom Hill's a fascinating player. If something happened to Jameis and Taysom had to step in and be the quarterback, I think you can win with Taysom Hill. For a while, I thought he was sort of Josh Allen-ish until Josh Allen became the best quarterback in the NFL all of a sudden out of nowhere. But look, I think there's a path where Taysom Hill can have success in this league, but Jameis Winston beat him out this summer. It was not, you know, predetermined. They both got a fair shot at it, and Jameis Winston was better. So I do wonder what that means. Does Taysom Hill continue to try to find a place where he can compete for a starting quarterback job, or does he settle into this? I'm a backup quarterback who also has this package of plays, but he's really good in that role. He has almost been worth the money that they paid him, which was close to $10.5 million a year as a receiver and a runner. I mean, he averages 5.5 yards carry when he runs the ball. He has 7 touchdown catches. The other, you know, he's such a unique guy. You know, I don't think he'll always make $10 million a year if he's not a quarterback, but he helps in a lot of ways, but I don't think he's the future at quarterback. I think Jameis Winston moved ahead of him as far as those options go.
Hey, Mike, you've been covering the NFL for a while, and because Hurricane Ida displaced the Saints, they had to play in Jacksonville, you would think that that would affect them more than the Packers. They're just going on the road, but how bizarre was that game? Because they just just blew them out, 38-3, and the Green Bay has gone on to win 5 since then. What in the world happened?
I know. Bizarre doesn't even begin to explain. First of all, that was one of Sean Payton's finest hours. Like, he loves situations like that. I'll give you a perfect example. They were up in the last time they played up in Seattle a couple of years ago. Drew Brees had, you remember, he tore the ligaments in his thumb the week before in Los Angeles.
Right.
And the way the schedule was set, the Saints were scheduled to spend the whole week in Seattle practicing for the next game. And Teddy Bridgewater made his debut at quarterback, and the Saints rallied around that adversity and came out and kind of, it beat Seattle pretty convincingly in a game where they weren't expected to win. I think he likes that when they have that look. We all got displaced in Dallas. We're all in this hotel together. Odds are stacked against us. Let's rally around it. But then he also shrewdly chose Jacksonville as the site. Partly they were hoping less Packers fans would show up in Jacksonville. That part didn't exactly play out. There were a lot of Packers fans there. But it was a hot day, outdoors. The Saints had 2 15-minute drives. He knew they were going to just run the ball. I mean, he really had a good plan for that game. They won that ball on both lines of scrimmage. The bigger surprise was after they so convincingly won that game, they just got destroyed in week 2 at Carolina.
Yeah.
And it was just as bad of a blowout the other way. So, and like you said, Green Bay's been really good. So some of that was week one randomness, I guess.
Yeah.
But look, the Saints are, you know, that's been a formula for them a lot, which is we're going to try to beat you on the offensive line. We're going to try to beat you on the defensive line. It's not just, you know, you think Saints and you think, oh, they're going to win 48-something. They sort of reinvented themselves since those days.
Well, you mentioned coming up here in 2019 with Bridgewater, and all I remember about that game was Alvin Kamara. Man, is that guy still?
Yeah, that hasn't changed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's unfortunate for us. But I was going to ask about him because he's such a good player, and I think he took a screen that went, you know, for like 40 yards, and he just refused to be tackled, and still playing at that level, I take it.
Yeah, he really is. He had 21 touchdowns last year in just 15 games. He really easily could be the reigning offensive player of the year right now. I think he got some votes for that. But, yeah, I mean, especially since Michael Thomas got hurt last year and hasn't played yet this year, he's the entire offense. I mean, it's to his detriment because defenses are giving everything they got to stop Alvin Kamara right now. It's not like a pick-your-poison offense anymore. It's a stop Alvin Kamara at all costs is the game plan for every team. He still continues to get his as either a runner or a receiver. The Saints know they have to feed him. Defenses know they're going to feed him. He's just an elite player. He's definitely top 5 at that position, maybe top 5 among all offensive playmakers in the league. But unfortunately for him, he's everyone knows he's the one thing you have to stop, and defenses have been acting accordingly this year.
Mike, I'm getting the impression you like the Saints' chances in this game.
Yeah, but they're still, I mean, I sort of do, but see, what Seattle is right now over the last 2 weeks is sort of what the Saints have been all season. You don't know exactly what you have yet. You're still trying to figure out what is this team like without Russell Wilson. The Saints have had 5 weeks to try to figure out what their identity is, and we still don't quite know. They have some flaws. They have some depth issues thanks to the salary cap cuts they had to make this off season. So they're an imperfect team. The one good thing about them is you know, it's spread out. Sometimes they can win with their run game. Sometimes they can win with their defense, and sometimes they can win because Jameis Winston can make some big plays. So they don't just rely on one thing. But they're certainly capable of having an off week. Like I said, we saw it in week two when they lost to Carolina, and then we saw them. They're the only team that's lost to the New York Giants this year. So they're not a perfect team by any stretch. So I never confidently think they're just going to blow a team out. They have to play well to win a game.
Mike, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and I'm sure we'll talk again down the road.
All right, thank you for having me.
There you go. Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation Saints reporter, joining us. Give us a little preview of that team. I just looked at it. I was correct yesterday. Saints are 5-point favorites at Lumen Field.
That's amazing. Yeah, somebody texted in, are you going to let this guy brag up the Saints for 25 minutes?
Sure.
Well, I mean, he does sound very – like what you said to him, Bob, was like, sounds like you like their chances. I mean, the adversity and the fact that they have, you know, the record that they do, you know, it sounds like they blew the Giant game. But the fact that they have what they have in with 8 injuries and key injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look.
To me, it's more about how the Seahawks have been playing than the Saints. We can look at their numbers and go, yeah, their defense looks like it's going to be a challenge. But I don't know what my level of confidence is against the Jags at this point. And that's just an honest statement. I don't, you know, beginning of season, you're going, okay, win, loss. Well, that's definitely a win there, Jacksonville at home. But, you know, depending on how this game goes on Monday, the way they've looked to this point, I'm not sure why you'd go into that game feeling cocky about it. You should win. You're at home, but look at this. You're a 5-point underdog at home. When's the last time something like that happened? Has that happened? I'm not a gambler, so I'm sure somebody.
Probably not since Russ has been here.
I can't imagine them ever being an underdog at home with Russell out there. That just. But there you go, 5 points. And Vegas is uncanny. They win a lot, those guys.
There may have been some where teams are slightly favored, but never like 5 points.
Yeah, man. All right. Do the Seahawks currently have an extra meeting guy on defense? We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, talk some NFL with him. Stay tuned for that conversation. Our thanks to Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation Saints reporter, who joined us in the previous segment. Looking at the Seahawks defense, we spent a lot of time talking about the Saints defense in that last segment, but looking at the Seahawks defense, which has been problematic, they've had moments or individuals that have stepped up, but is there we talked to Mark Schlereth about this, and you bring up the term extra meeting guy. You know, just that guy, hey, let's get in there and really talk about how we're going to deal with this guy on defense. And we asked Mark about that in terms of the Seahawks defense. Does he see anybody that he identifies as that guy?
I always think to myself, do you have that one guy? We used to call them war daddies. Do you have a war daddy on your team? A dude that you have to double team every freaking time. Like a guy that you have to say, okay, where is that guy? Where is number whatever? And how are we going to contend with that guy? Because if you don't have that guy, I can run anything I want. I don't have to worry about always having to have double hands, 4 hands on that one dude, right? And so my thought process is this. When you don't have a war daddy in your front 4 or your front 3 or your front, you know, 5, however you decide to play defense, you don't have one dude that we say, how are we going to block that guy? Then I don't have any issues. I can go 5 one-on-ones. I can go 5-0 protection. I can get 5 receivers out in the route. I can do whatever I want.
So he's calling them war daddies. You call him an extra meeting guy. Same thing. Same individual. Is there anybody you look at on the Seahawks defense and think if you're on the Saints right now and you're the defensive coordinator, you're isolating and saying, hey, let's have an extra conversation about this guy?
Not the way they're playing right now, but typically it would be Jamal Adams. You know, and look, Bobby makes lots of plays, and he makes tackles all over the field. But, you know, I mean, the way that they're using him, you might want to just, like, run right at him because they're not using him in a physical manner. Mm-hmm. He's not stepping up. He's not, you know, taking on linemen. He's not doing it. It's just not how they're using him. I think they're just trying to free him up, you know, so he can run around and make tackles. But, Yeah, I mean, shoot, you look at, yeah, Jamal Adams would be the one guy. But, I mean, he's not this year. We saw something that's edging closer to that.
In the last game.
Last game.
Yeah, until getting hit in the face.
And then he got hit in the face, yeah.
But, yes, you're right. And that's, I think, most people will forget about it because of that play that he was blitzing. He was just almost getting there. He had an impact. He had a tackle for a loss in that game. And they only had two. He had one of them. So he was arguably playing his best game of the season up until the face. Wait,
I didn't hear anything from him after the game or anything. Think about this. I mean, we talk all the time about these pro football players, how they always want to get a chip on their shoulder. That thing they did, the graphic during the, you know, in between plays.
Oh, the Legion of Boo?
That was pretty bad, man. I mean, you know, you had Legion of Boom. They had all the, you know, number one scoring defense for, I think it was 4 years in a row.
Yep.
Which is amazing and makes them, in my mind, the best defense of all time in NFL history. I mean, you can talk about the Chicago Bears, all that. Then you throw up a picture of Bobby, Jamal, and Quandre Diggs. I'm like, how did he get in there?
He didn't deserve to be in that picture.
Yeah, but I mean, if you know, if you think there's a lot of debate going on whether or not Jamal Adams or, you know, whether he was worth the money. And then, you know, same with Bobby, but just mostly because they make so much money.
Right.
But, you know, all of a sudden you put that up there. I mean, I feel like those guys are going to be, I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
I would be really angry. And, you know, and especially if I'm Quandre Diggs, who's actually, you know, playing pretty well, I think. I think that's pretty much established. Yeah, I feel like, you know, with Jamal, that maybe that's going to be the thing that finally gets him, because there couldn't have been a worse thing that happened to him. I mean, honestly, if he would have got flat-backed, okay, you know, maybe that, but there's all of this discussion about him not being able to play the pass and not being able to, you know, catch the ball and everything, and then you have, I mean, it could have gone off his, well, I guess it could have hit him in the junk.
Yeah.
You know,
trying to think of the more embarrassing spot.
Yeah, maybe that's more embarrassing, but look, I believe in Jamal. I think Jamal Adams is a fantastic player. I think you got to use him in the right way, but I just think that there's not anything that could have happened that would be worse than what happened.
Considering what he's being knocked for.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, not good coverage. He's not good in coverage. He doesn't have good ball skills. He can't catch. And then the ball just bounces right off his face. He clearly didn't see it. Because, again, I mean, his arms didn't move like he was even attempting to catch it.
He moved after.
Yeah, he was isolated on the guy he was lighting. He was lining up a hit, and that's all he saw. So,
and I mean, if he hadn't had a face mask on, that would have hit him right in the eye.
That could have been bad.
It was going right at his eyes. So, you know, he just didn't see it. And, playing into the biggest criticism that everybody has for him. Then they have that graphic on there. And then, you know,
What about Dunlap? Where is he?
That's a great question,
I mean,
man.
I think we all understood you're not getting him in his prime when he came over, but he was still a very good player. And you look at his numbers through six games so far, just six total tackles, two passes knocked down.
Which I don't remember.
I don't recall that either, but I'll trust the numbers. After six games with the Seahawks last year, six sacks, 14 tackles, 11 quarterback hits.
Yeah.
What has happened? Are they using him differently, or is he on the field less, which I can't imagine? He's been so invisible.
Yeah, they have a different front this year, and I don't know what that means as far as his pass rush ability, but I've seen him dropping back into pass coverage a number of times. So, you know, and I don't know if he likes that or not. I remember during the preseason game when we had him on, Kurt Menefee and I, and we were talking to him down in Las Vegas. And we asked about Alton Robinson. Remember Alton Robinson covered that out and up? And
yeah.
The guy caught a touchdown, but still, he was on a receiver.
Running with him.
Yeah. So I asked him about Carlos about that, and he's like, I don't want to give away any secrets. So, you know, I guess that was a plan that they were going to drop. Now, I'll say this. We were out there watching the D-line most of the time, Bob, you and I, during camp. They were having those guys drop back into, you know, pass drops and pattern recognition. And, you know, like you saw Alton Robinson go with the out and up there. So, which is what you're supposed to do. And so that could be part of it as well. But, I was going back through all of his game logs. He had, I think in 2017, there was a five-game streak where he didn't get like a half a sack or a sack. But to go six games without a sack, you have to go back to 2010, which I believe was his second year in the league. Even his rookie year, he had, you know, like every other game or so, he was involved. He was getting sacks. And look, he's got to be frustrated too. The guy can rush the passer.
Yeah.
We found that out last year. Jamal Adams can play the run. He can sack. He can rush the passer. I mean, and neither of them have really been close to getting those things. So it leads me to believe, and I had this argument with somebody. I was like, did he become a crappy player, Jamal Adams? Did Carlos Dunlap, I mean, you could say, well, he's getting older and everything. You saw him out there at practice. He looks as athletic as anybody.
Looks exactly the same.
Yeah. So, you know, that it's not happening. Now, I would say this, if they're playing better defense and, you know, at the sacrifices is that those two guys are not making plays, they're doing it for the team, it's all for the good of the defense, okay.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're not playing good defense. So, I think it's a pretty direct result of, you know, these guys not being involved and not playing, you know.
Not being put in the positions to succeed.
Of their strengths, yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting because you're right. The idea that overnight, and now the convenient excuse for Jamal from a lot of people, oh, he got paid, he doesn't care, he's not trying. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Because you see him hustling. You see him flying around.
He's a maniac.
Yeah.
He's a maniac. His energy is still exactly where it was last year. He's just they're using him differently. Until this last game, that started to look more familiar to what he was the year previous. Now, it didn't result in what you wanted it to, but he did, again, have the tackle for a loss, which he hadn't had before that. So it's getting closer. Maybe they looked at that and said, okay, yeah, we're getting this. Now we're on the right track with him. Why they got off the track is the question to me. Why would you change what worked so well last year? And the same with Dunlap. I don't know if it's more of a subtle change with him, but for him to be as invisible as he has been is just weird. You're just like, where is this guy? Okay, yeah, he's older. Maybe he's not who he was 5 years ago, but he's not this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just these guys got to step up, though. Those are guys you got to count on coming into this one. All right, coming up, it is Wednesday, so it's time for What If Wednesday, and what if the Seahawks were blown out against the Steelers? We'll piece it all together next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
What?
What?
What? What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
We do it every Wednesday. What If Wednesday is presented by Hardwick and Pendergast, personal injury attorneys. Coming up at the top of the hour, we got the professor, John Clayton, so stick around for that. But the question is, the hypothetical that we throw out every Wednesday, what if the Seahawks didn't rally and had just gotten their doors blown off against the Steelers? Now, we've talked about, you know, needing to see drastic changes if things go the wrong way, which they're still... You still lost, whether you got blown out by 3 or 30, or lost by 3 or 30, you still got tuned up. But it almost feels like if they really just weren't even competitive defensively, that it might have necessitated an immediate change. And the fact that they took it to overtime, and that may have, I don't know. Maybe Pete's just, it doesn't matter what happens. I'm not making a change like that midseason. Maybe he's just of that mind, so it doesn't matter. But it feels like if there was going to be a plus to losing big, that maybe it would force his hand.
Is this yours, Lefko?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's my
it's a good
what
one.
If. Wanted you to ponder.
This is a very good one. Because, and by the way, if it had happened, you know what I would have said? I'm not surprised, because I expected that to happen. I was very discouraged after that Ram game. Just because the things, like I said, were so simple. But yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think... I just don't think how bad would it have to be for Pete to do the things that you mentioned, like bringing in Cam Newton or firing Ken Norton? How bad would it have to be?
What if they would have gotten shut out?
If they got shut out, or, you know, I guess Bob and I were just talking about this. You know, I told Bob, like, if somebody called me a crappy player, okay, that's fine. But don't ever accuse me of if somebody accused you of dogging it, that's the worst thing you can do. As an NFL player, especially, you know, and like for, you know, we talked about Quandre Diggs, and, you know, he looks like he's really frustrated. But, I mean, if you're no good, okay, that's fine. But, I mean, if you're dogging it out there, which means the play's still going and you're jogging And I always say that. I always use that to maybe the J is silent, Bob.
It's yogging.
It's yogging.
I guess you just run.
You just run. Yeah.
It's a soft J.
So, or maybe it is yogging, but that's the worst thing you can do. And, you know, I think if that were the case, I mean, you would think, okay, well, there's like a mutiny or something going on here because, you know, if you're out there and you're not running, and they always talk about, you know, with Ken Norton, how everybody loves him and everything. And like, if you love your coach, you go out and play hard for him, man. You know, Tom Catlin, I love that guy, man. He put so much work into it. And the last thing I would ever want as a player was somebody accusing me. Now, sometimes it's an awareness thing. And, you know, I've seen myself do it. I know Moyer's talked about it before, where you're like, it's just a, you know, you're not being conscientious at the time, and you might see yourself like watching the game. And that's what Chuck used to say. Look at you. You're watching the game there. And so that causes you to kind of slow down a little bit. But that's the worst indictment you can, you know, put upon a player, is that you're dogging it. You're not going 100%. You're not going full speed.
And some of that is us responding to some text and tweets, people saying, oh, Jamal got paid. He doesn't care anymore. Dunlap's here for a paycheck. They're not trying. That's the implication. Oh, I'm comfortable now. I got my money. I don't really need to put in the effort.
Yeah, I don't see that at all.
And that's where that came from. We're like, yeah, rip Jamal. He hasn't made the plays he's being paid to make. But if you're ripping his effort, you're just not watching. You're not watching the guy. If you want to isolate him and just watch him the entire game, you watch his effort. We can talk about whether he's successful or not, or whether they're using him the correct way or not. But to imply, well, he got paid, so his effort has changed. That's you're 1,000% wrong. You were just flat out wrong. Sorry.
Yeah, it's not a question of effort. It's more about, and you can see the frustration on his face. But you know, you see, you know, every once in a while you'll see a guy out there jogging. You know, remember the throwback, and then so it was the San Francisco game. I don't know if it was a run. Yeah, it was a run, and then the running back threw it back to the quarterback, which was Garoppolo, I believe, mm-hmm. and then he threw it downfield, and Jamal Adams made a play, you know, 20, 30 yards. You go back and look at that play. There's like six or seven guys that are yogging. So, you know, that kind of concerns me. So if you see that kind of stuff, you know, the guys shut it down or whatever they call it, you know, look at you, you're shutting it down while the play's still going, then that's a problem. But, you know, to me, it's not, that's not what's going on with, you know, with Jamal Adams. That guy's a demon, man. You can't stop him. And he'll just constantly, you know, run and play as hard as he can. It's just a matter of how are you going to use him. But it's a great question, because it makes me wonder, because I was thinking about this earlier. You know, we're going down the same path defensively, although that was a pretty good performance against the Steelers, but going down the same path as last year. And, like, how long does it have to – how many more of these performances do we need before they make some kind of a drastic change, or somebody decides, hey, we need to have a meeting and all hold each other accountable, or whatever has to get done. But, you know, if they would have gotten blown out and the Steelers put up, you know, 35, 40 points, and they gave up, you know, 500 yards, wouldn't you have to do something on defense? You would have to.
I kind of thought you'd have to by now anyway, but it's, you know, the biggest change has been Trey Flowers, and that's it.
Yeah. So, but luckily, that didn't happen, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to see another week of improvement, and, you know, at least that'll be a little bit shorter time than it was last year.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, we've got the Professor John Clayton joining us, so you guys know the drill. If you've got a question for John, you can text it in right now, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. It's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company, and he is coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.